The following podcast is brought to you on behalf of the Saracen Supporters Association and is not an official product of Saracens Limited. Content provided voluntarily by our guests and contributors are of their own opinion, which may change over time and should not be taken as fact, particularly as the podcast hosts are regularly talking drivel anyway. If you've got some drivel of your own you'd like to share, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Fezcast_SSA. You can search Facebook for the Fezcast, or you can email fezcast.ssa@outlook.com.
You're listening to the Fezcast.
This is a public service announcement on behalf of the Fezcast. I'd like to make 2 points before we start the show. Number one, thank you to everybody who supported the Fezcast over the season, but in particular during finals week, where we had nearly 900 downloads of the shows. Your support means a huge amount to us all. Secondly, the part you're going to hear, part one, was recorded on Sunday morning in the immediate aftermath of our win at Twickenham. As a result, 3 of the presenters are in differing stages of hangovers, and the 4th, Matt, was still on the lash on a stag do somewhere on the mean streets of Hertfordshire, which does mean he was recorded on his mobile phone, which does also mean at some points he will sound a little bit like Norman Collier. Just to paraphrase though, basically what he was saying is, champions, Faz is a god, Mark McCall is a genius, Theo Dan, we won. There you go. Anyway, on with the rest of the pod.
Listening to the Fezcast, which is proudly sponsored by the Saracen Supporters Association, and I'm Alison Davis, one of the SSA committee. For a £10 annual subscription, the SSA provides our members with monthly newsletters, virtual and in-person player events, away match ticket allocations, and we organise pre-match gatherings at away matches. We sponsor men's and women's players, and we support the Saracens Foundation Track Club on behalf of our members. On top of all that, every year we have a seasonal SSA badge, which is exclusive to members. Where else can you get that much value for a tenner? Join now at membermojo.co.uk/SSA, or come and see us on match day in the Oasis at the Stonex.
This is the Fezcast.
Welcome to the Smiley Winners Cheesy Grin Face edition of the Fezcast, recording part one on Sunday morning, because we do have a part two where we're going to be speaking to Kat Evans and talking about the women's game from Sunday. But this is Sunday morning. A few hungover faces, a few still pissed faces, I think, to be perfectly honest with you. But what a great day out yesterday. Barry, Matt, John, thank you for joining us in your various states of post-celebratory whateverness. But what a great day.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was a good day out at Twickenham. The sun was shining. The game was a lot better than last year's. The Sale fans were brilliant, the ones that I met anyway. And it was good to see so many other neutral fans there, if you like, as well. Shame it wasn't a little bit higher attendance, but a great day out and the right result, I think.
Well, absolutely. And I'll say this to you, John. I mean, I met a few neutral fans there. And yeah, I mean, we've seen all over the internet, the keyboard warriors coming out and giving their 2p. But they are not indicative of real rugby. And I mean, I spoke to Exeter Chiefs fans. I spoke to Leicester Tigers fans. We had a laugh and a joke asking them whether they had a Saracen shirt underneath. No, full well, they didn't. And yeah, I mean, the first thing I'm going to say, John, and I'm sure you'll agree with me, one, I can understand people not wanting Saracens to win. That's not a problem. I don't have any issue with that whatsoever. And I don't think the club does either. But it's the people who looked at that game and are still saying it was a rubbish game, whatever. That was a brilliant game of rugby. I don't care. Both sides put on a show. And, yeah, okay, there were 20,000 empty seats there, but the 60,000 of us in there gave it an atmosphere. and it was worthy of a final.
It was, yeah. It was such a... Well, you think there were 60 points in the game for a start, so that proves that it weren't boring, at least. I mean, for a neutral, it probably would have been a bit more enjoyable in patches than it was for us, perhaps, but I'm just glad it's done and it went our way. But, yeah, as far as the neutrals go, yeah, I spoke to a few, and, you know, they weren't backwards in coming forwards, to be quite honest. A lot of them didn't want Saracens to win, but I think that's because they can't say anything now. We served our time in the Championship. We've come back and we've done it. And there's nothing no one can say this time. And that's probably one of the most pleasing elements of it all for me, actually, to be quite honest.
Absolutely, absolutely. But before we get into the game, I've got a bone to pick with Matt. Sorry, mate. I know Matt's walking down the street somewhere in Hertfordshire on a stag do. But the bone to pick here is you put all the polls out and everything, and the golden moment, you put out all these different golden moments without realising that Theo Dan, after my little pep talk to him, which I think I'm taking a bit of credit actually for that, but that 50-22 kick from Theo, that's my golden moment of the season. So whatever wins it, sorry, it's been usurped by that one, Matt.
Well, this is the benefit of us doing the show about the team of year and all the awards after the final, whereas we've asked everyone else before it. We can come up with something else, and maybe I've done all those polls, and no one's say is actually going to have any credit apart from us. So we're in charge, aren't we?
Well, absolutely. That's the benefit of doing it. We stuck our hands up to do this sort of thing, and we did it. But right, let's start with Theo Dan, shall we? I think number one. Okay, I'm going to say this now. There's been a bit of people saying that there was a few mistakes being made, particularly first half, first 20 minutes maybe. I'm going to say this straight off. Both teams played rugby at an intensity and a level that I think only La Rochelle in Northern Hemisphere rugby could have coped with yesterday. If we were playing anybody else, and it could have been Leicester, it could have been Leinster, it could have been Racing, whoever, we would have still won that game. Because Sale pushed us to a level where we played as good as we did, number one. Number two, Theo Dan came on after what? 18 minutes? Was it something stupid like that?
Ten minutes.
10 minutes. And he, you know, Owen Farrell, and we'll talk about Owen Farrell in a bit, but Theo Dan, for me, was my man of the match. He just was outstanding. And as everybody said, I mean, we talked about it when we spoke to him last week, he's just booked himself a place in France, hasn't he, 2023?
He's got to be very, very close. He's got some versatility there as well, which will benefit him going forward. And I think they'll be looking at him. I'd not be at all surprised to see him given a run in one of the warm-up games, at least, just to try him out at that level. And I mean, in fairness, he probably proved yesterday that he is ready for it now, because as we said, coming on after 10 minutes in your first final, a hot day, a tight match, really most of the way through, and playing the way he did, I think he showed he's ready for international rugby.
And the other thing to say about that, and I'll ask this one of Matt, because I know Matt likes a bit of controversy and everything, but he came on because Jamie George had been taken out by Tom Curry. I've seen him back on the television. I can almost see why Tom Curry got away with it. But I think if we'd lost that match and Tom Curry had stayed on the field, I would be incandescent. And although I say I think it's the only thing the refereeing team did get particularly wrong. I say that in relation to Robin Islop's yellow. Tom Curry should have got a yellow for that. There was no arm involved in it. There was no wrap. And it was shoulder to head. And the mitigation is that Jamie was low, which perhaps makes it a yellow. I don't know how you see it, Matt.
I wish I could always agree with you, Jez. But yeah, I think Jamie George ducked very, very, very late. It was a long mitigation for it. So I'm glad it didn't make an impact on the game particularly. I didn't see much of that, but you're right. I think Theo Dan coming on, he did. Whether he might have played better, but he certainly had a fantastic game that Jamie wasn't really getting into after 10 minutes. But maybe that would have been the plan anyway. Maybe Theo Dan might have gone at half time and done what he did. But I think just the way we were playing, chucking it around everywhere, really suited Theo Dan's game. So no harm done, really.
Absolutely. Now, another couple of unsung heroes in that game, as it were. I think Marco Riccioni, yeah, he had his problems at scrum time, but he began, he sorted those out, but he did 73 minutes in that heat at the coldface. I mean, that was immense. And the other guy, you know, I mean, Q-Tizard played out of his skin. I mean, they all played out of skin. Marrow does what Marrow does. And, you know, we've said this before. He has high standards, which, you know, is very difficult to reach every week. Nick Ezekwe was the difference in that pack, though. He was just outstanding. His line-out work in particular was brilliant. But every time there was a hit made, when Sale looked like they might get away, Nick Ezekwe got up from the bottom of it, John.
Yeah, he was great. There was that whole engine room was really good. If you know, you mentioned the fact that there was a change in the front row in the first 10 minutes, and then 10 minutes after that, there's a change on the wing, and it seemed to galvanise everyone, actually. I think even when later on in the game, like Callum Hunter-Hill come on, and he put two ginormous hits in the last few minutes, and you think, I don't know why they're still going. A lot of them must have been running on empty. It's the first time I've seen them go down with cramp for a while, especially inside 80 minutes. And that, yeah, all of them were, I reckon all of them probably slept quite well last night after the amount of effort they put in.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. You mentioned Callum Hunter-Hill because there were a couple of substitutes, Barry, who came on and did make a big difference. Callum Hunter-Hill was on the field for 19 minutes, and in that time he made 13 tackles. And I counted them back. I think the majority of those were in the last 5 minutes when, you know, we'd gone down to 14 men and backs were a little bit against the wall, and he just threw himself into everything. The other sub who made a big, big impact, Duncan Taylor. He just comes up with magic moments, doesn't he? You know, and we talked about Duncan before, didn't we, where he say he's had a shortened career, but every time he gets on the field, he does something amazing.
Well, I watched the game back as well this morning prior to recording this, and I thought you're always going to have a man of the match or a star of the match, whatever they're calling it these days, because TV want that and they want someone to talk to immediately on the side of the pitch. But I really think that anyone in a Saracen shirt yesterday could have won that, and that's, you know, not just 1-15, that's 1-23, because it was a complete squad performance, not a team performance, a complete squad performance. Everyone stepped up. No one had a bad game. I don't think anyone even really had an average game. Everyone contributed to that win, and they should take immense, immense pride from that.
Well, absolutely. And I think before we mention the actual TV man of the match, I think it's also important to say that that also goes for Sale. I don't think there were any players on the Sale side who had bad games either. You know, and we talked all about Master versus Apprentice, Smalley versus Alexander Cern, and all of this. Sale are a team built in the mould of Saracens. You can see that. And not just on the field, but also off the field, with all the cultures that Alex Anderson has taken from Saracens to Sale. And it just proves that the way that Saracens have gone about their business over the last 10 to 15 years is the correct way of doing it. And, you know, people have got to look at that template and say, you know, rugby's on its backside at the moment in a lot of ways. We think London Irish are going to go to the wall, Wasps, Worcester, whatever. The way that Saracens do their business is the right way of doing it. And it makes rugby not only viable, but it also makes it exciting. And there was people talking about it, you know, disenfranchised rugby fans and everything. If they can't have watched that game like yesterday and seen the two best teams play at an intensity and a level and not enjoy it, well, rugby's not for them. John.
That's true, yeah. I mean, the thing is, there'll always be this kind of, the caveat to this season will always be the fact that we've had two clubs, looks like potentially three going out of business, which is just so sad. But when you see, like you said, mate, the way the game was played, and the way that the Saracens' fingerprints are all over this league, it's good to see. But last year, it obviously came back to haunt us with Borthwick doing one over McCall. Just grateful it didn't happen again. But yeah, hopefully there'll be some good news coming out of London Irish soon, and we can just enjoy the summer and look forward to the fixtures coming out on July the 18th, and we can do it all over again.
Well, absolutely. Well, now, I mean, what we do need to do is talk about the TV man of the match. And Owen Farrell is a god amongst rugby players, quite simply. You know, you'll see people out there still turning round and saying this, that, and the other, and it's all bullshit about Owen. I apologise, you're going to have to press the explicit button here. But anybody now telling you that Owen Farrell is anything but the best 10 in England, Northern Hemisphere, I would say in the world, is talking absolute rubbish and is stupid. It quite simply is. He ran that game yesterday. Like, you know, I can't believe how good he was, what he did. The 50-22s, the pass to Max Malins for Max's try was just sublime. And he's looking at it as he's being mullered into the ground and places that pass. The couple of runs he did where it was on. You know, George Ford didn't have a bad game, but he was made to look a bit anonymous by the fact that Owen was just out of this world, wasn't he, Matt?
He was, yeah. And I think actually I had quite a good benefit of my season. I spent the whole of this season at Stonet sitting behind a set of posts and watching Owen Farrell sort of take the ball from a standing start and not actually move anywhere. And sort of from that angle, it often looks a bit indecisive. I don't know whether it wants to cast left or right. It doesn't seem like he's got a lot of options. But looking side on between them, you can actually see that it's a pretty deliberate practice run. Just to take the ball, hold on to it for a bit, pause for a second, and let the defence come to him. And then, like you say, that last second pass to Malins will typify how much that tactic has worked for us this season. And I've not been able to notice it from where I've sat. So... It's a new part of his game as well. He's always been the player that can take the ball to the line. He doesn't make a lot of meters, but he does carry the ball into contact and set other players up. But yeah, that style of play this weekend, I think, really changed the dynamic of our attack, certainly in the final. And I think that's what's helped this whole season as well. So yeah, Owen Farrell's taken his game to the next level again.
Yeah, absolutely, Matt. You're 100% right there. And yeah, I mean, Barry, what he does do, isn't it? He might not make the meters, as Matt said there, but the players that will make meters off of him. And I mean, Max Malins is going to miss having that opportunity next season at Bristol, I think. And whoever comes in and plays outside him is going to, you know, Owen's doing. But I think the most important thing about what Owen was doing, and it was epitomised, I think David Flatman picked it up on the ITV commentary, the behind reverse pass he put into off the Alex Goode pass. I think it was into Elliot Daly, wasn't it, late on? And Flats just turned around and said he was grinning as he was doing that. And for a man who's known for being a bit dour, can make you and me in our rant periods, Barry, look a little bit, you know, like not Stanley and Waldorf, more Fozzie Bear and Kermit. I mean, the fact that he's enjoying his rugby, and that's that joy de vivre that he's bringing to the team and the club, while still being determined, while still, you know, he's just a test match rugby playing machine animal that elicits so much enjoyment. And I think the prime example, again, Flats picks it up on commentary, when Robin Hislop went off, you could see actually Faz relished that. You know, a lot of players would have turned around and gone, oh, you know, and whinged about it, or be complaining about it. He's asked the question of Luke Pearce. Luke Pearce has turned around and given him his reasons and everything. He's gone, well, fair enough. I don't agree with you potentially, but let's go back. And he just wound the team up and said, we will relish this. We're going to enjoy this moment. And it's, you know, and we'll win and we'll do it as hard as we possibly can, Barry.
Yeah, I think we picked up on this a couple of weeks ago. Owen's playing with a smile on his face, as we say. And I wonder if he's just said, if he's listened to all the criticism and all the absolute drivel that's been spouted over social media and everywhere else this year about who's England's best 10. And he thought, do you know what? I don't care what anyone else thinks anymore. I'm going to go out there and enjoy my game, and I'm going to play my game, because, you know, he'll know that his time is slowly, hopefully, winding down. But he's not getting any younger, as none of us are. And he's just playing the game and enjoying it and going out there. And it, I mean, he's been superb this season, absolutely superb. He's seen off Marcus Smith at number 10 for me. And yesterday you probably saw off George Ford at number 10 for me. And if he's not starting at number 10 for England, then I don't know what's wrong with the world. I really don't.
No, absolutely. I mean, and it's interesting. If you give him a scrum half inside him, who is going to supply quick ball in the same way as Ivan Van Zyl does, off of a strong forward pack, then, you know, let's be honest about it. I'll say this now. If we can do that, and I think Gus Waugh yesterday for Sale Sharks really showed his, you know, cards in that way. Rafi Kirkis, you know, the lad at Bristol, these quick service scrum halves. Give Owen Farrell that inside him behind a strong pack, and England's suddenly become, I'm not saying favourites, but they're certainly becoming more better for the World Cup, don't you think, John?
Well, yeah, anyone but Ben Young's at nine, really. I think that box would be ticked. If you're talking about pairings for the World Cup, I'll say Alex Mitchell is probably the best nine, English nine in England. But I think Farrell's got this ability to make anyone around him look good. That's another thing that people don't pick up on. He raises the level naturally because of his character and the way he is. But he just makes people around him better because of the standards that he demands and the quality that he's got. And it's difficult not to look good when you've got him at 10 next year. He's world class. He always has been. We've known this for ages. And hopefully, well, that may be a little bit too late now. Hopefully, the rest of the world are opening their eyes and seeing it as well, finally.
Well, absolutely. Look, I mean, we could go on and talk more and more about this final, but then I think we would be moving over into the realms of gloating and arrogance or whatever. Let's keep a little bit of humility about it. I suppose the question that we will answer at the start of season four, and we'll leave it till season four, is can Saracens get better and can the rest of the league catch up with them? So that's something for us to think about over the summer when we're doing our holiday assignments, guys. But other than that, I say, look, we're champions. The trophy's back where it belongs, in the Stonex trophy room. Long may it continue. And from us on the Fezcast to all the Saracens family and the Saracens team, well done, boys. Congratulations. We're proud of you. And, you know, you made an awful lot of people very, very happy today. Just also mention Jackson Ray. What a great send-off for a legend there as well. Almost as if Robin Islop getting a yellow card was preordained almost, wasn't it? But there we go. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time. We'll finish here. We'll be back with part two, where I'm chatting with Joe and the retiring Cat Evans. Cheers, then.
Thanks, everyone. Stand up.
This is the Fezcast.
Hi, I'm Alex Lewington, and I'm a Looseheads ambassador.
I'm Sydney Gregson, and I'm a Looseheads ambassador.
Our aim is to tackle the stigma of mental health in rugby and society in general.
The Looseheads mission is to place a mental health lead at every rugby club. Get in touch now to find out more.
You can find us at Looseheads on all social media channels or at looseheads.co.uk.
Take care and enjoy the rest of the podcast.
Enjoy the rest of the pod.
You're listening to the Fezcast. Listening to the Fezcast.
Hi, Alex Osterberry here, Director of Rugby for Saracens Women. You're listening to the Saracens Fezcast.
This is the Fezcast.
Well, welcome to part two of the Fezcast. After our cheesy grin part one, with a few sore heads and slightly perhaps drunk on euphoria, we're a bit more down to earth now, but we're joined by a club legend, I think. I mean, we talked about a lot of club legends, but Cat Evans has joined us after announcing some big news this week, joining me and Joe to have a chat. Good evening, Cat, and welcome to the Fezcast.
Evening. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I mean, it's all fair to say men, you know, being a man and boy, well, woman and girl, Saracens has been a big part of your life. and you made the big decision. Now's the time to step down. Was it a difficult decision, Kat, or is it just, yeah, you know, it's time now and get out at the top, as it were?
Yeah, I mean, it's always a difficult decision, I think. You know, I love rugby and I'd like to play it, you know, carry on playing forever, but there comes a time where I think you have to go, yeah, it's probably a right time now to hang up my boots. I think, you know, the game's getting more professional, so it's harder to commit so much time to the game. And, you know, I'm getting older, so my body's like, come on, maybe do something else now.
Well, I mean, I mean, and Joe will tell you this. I mean, I can say the benefits of running marathons in your 50s. So, I mean, that's something to do. I mean, I took that up with the late 40s. So, I mean, but yeah, I mean, the hard knocks, you're not going to miss those, are you? The getting up and thinking of the bruises in the morning.
Yeah, I think that's it. It's the being hit by a bus feeling. That's the one you're going to miss. You're not going to miss. I think when the game's on a Saturday, you kind of don't mind having a Sunday that's a bit lazy. But then when the game's on a Sunday and you've got to go to work on the Monday, it's kind of like, oh, God, I can't move.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And a big bruising game yesterday for Saracens women as well. Joe, you were there. What were your thoughts?
Well, I didn't make it to the game, but I did watch it on the live stream. But it was a pretty bruising game, I think, overall. Competitive. Backwards and forwards and back, as we knew that it probably would be, against a strong Bristol team that were obviously trying to secure their fourth place and cement their playoff place. So, yeah, it was a really, really good game to watch. I think there's some really good performances. Grace Moore, for me, definitely player of the match. She played outstanding, but there were some good players play across the pitch there, and also a little bit of work to do, maybe, for the team moving on to the last game of the regular season and then into the postseason.
Yeah, how did you feel it went yesterday, Kat, looking at it and, you know, a day afterwards and, you know, what was the feeling around the club?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we were happy to get the win. I think it was a lot closer than we probably had hoped it would be. Like, we knew it would be a tough game, but I think, you know, we'd rather it be a little bit more one-sided. I think, yeah, it was, as Joe said, it was sort of very back and forth. Sarri score, Bristol score, Sarri score, Bristol score. You know, it was close. It was a little bit nail biting. I think even when I was coming onto the pitch, I was like, oh God, if we could just score another try before I come on, I'd be happy. And then Bristol scored, and I was like, ah, that wasn't the try I was hoping for. But yeah, it was good, and like Joe said, like, there were some really good performances, and I agree, Grace had a great game. But yeah, there's still things to work on. I think it was a little bit scrappy in some areas that we probably just need to tidy up a little bit.
I suppose the point here is that in previous years, Saracens, and you know, with one or maybe two clubs have been there. Now you're looking all the way down the league and you're seeing competitiveness pretty much throughout the league. And I mean, you're going away to Loughborough on the weekends, you know, and that's going to be a tough match. Is it a case that Saracens have been at a level where the improvements they can make, without saying that there's no improvements we've made, but the improvements that could be made are so tiny, whereas other teams have been making improvements and it's been a huge improvement in closing the gap?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, as you said, there's always sort of been just a couple of teams at the top that sort of fight it out, and then the rest haven't really been in the sort of running. Not really competitive games. You might get the one odd one or two where it was like sort of a shock, like oh, these have turned up this week. But year on year, for the sort of last 4 or 5 years. Every team is getting better and better and better, and they're now closing the gap between us. So all the games are competitive, and you know, there are no easy games. It's a challenge. Even I think Loughborough are sitting third from bottom at the minute, but even playing against Loughborough will still be a challenge. We can't just not turn up. Like, it won't be a walk in the park. And I think you're right in saying, like, there are minimal things that Saris can do to sort of stop them catching, you know, there's the, to stay ahead. But again, you know, maybe that will come with more full-time sort of contracts there where their players are training full-time, and that may make that gap a little bit bigger. But it is good that the league is more competitive now, so it's not necessarily a bad thing. It just means Sarries have got to work a bit harder.
Well, I was going to say to Joe as a spectator, and you've watched more games than I have this year of the women playing, but it does seem to me that because there's been a closing of the gap, there's also a level that perhaps an aura of Saracens' invincibility has perhaps worn off a little bit, not because Saracens aren't the team still to beat, which obviously they are, but other teams are, and Bristol yesterday were the prime example. They felt happy to start throwing that ball around, and they played some scintillating stuff, particularly in the back. So there's a couple of tries where, you know, I don't think you could have Owen Farrell marshalling your defence or whatever, and they would have gone through it because having that almost that belief that, yes, we can get close to Saracens is making games harder. I don't know if you agree, Joe.
I think it's nice that Sarries are up at the top and that, you know, people want to beat Sarries. I think it's a nice place for the Saracens teams to be. And, you know, it's nice for the supporters to go anywhere and people to be worried that Saracens are either visiting the team or they're coming to the Stone X, which we know is a bit of a fortress for the girls anyway. So, you know, I think it's good that the games are becoming more competitive. I think you're seeing that. You saw it yesterday. I mean, Sale on Saturday morning had a great performance against Gloucester Hartbury. You know, and they're all just performing sort of really, really consistently now. And I think as that happens and those contracts come in, both at club and international level, we'll find that the standard of the game across the women's game just completely elevates. You know, you've got a couple of new teams coming into the Premier 15s next season. So that'll be interesting to see where they are. We know that there's been some player movements around for Ealing and Leicester Tigers. So, yeah, I think the forthcoming seasons are really going to be interesting to watch. And I'm sure Kat, despite retiring from the game, will still be watching with an avid interest and still supporting the black and red.
Yeah, always, you know. It's the only club I've ever played for, so it's kind of, or only senior club. It's kind of, yeah, a big deal, so it will be.
I suppose, you know, I mean, without wishing to push the point or anything, the fact that, you know, this is all coming at the end of your career. And I mean, there must be mixed emotions about it, thinking, why can't I be 10 years younger and having all the benefits of professional contracts and greater exposure, more, you know, more people watching, 50,000 odd people going to international games at Twickenham, all this. I mean, there has to be mixed emotions about that, surely, Kat.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, like I never thought to actually, when I was a lot younger, I thought, oh, well, I will be in the time frame where it goes professional. And then it kind of never went professional. I thought, oh, no, I'm not going to be in this. This isn't going professional anytime soon. And then obviously it started to. So, yeah, definitely. Like it would be great to be 10 years younger and still able to, you know, live up to playing full time and training full time. But, you know, the pathway's got to be paved for the next generation. So those coming through, like it's happened in football where you've had your sort of full-timers and your part-timers and you have that sort of mixed team where some people are full-time, some people aren't. And it just has to be done. That's just the way it has to go. So eventually it will be full-time.
So, Kat, let's go back over your career. And I mean, 200 odd appearances for Saracens, as I said, you know, since you were, you know, really young to now. You've been at Saracens your entire career. What has been the highlights for you of that time? You know, is it the trophies, or is it just the camaraderie between yourself and the rest of the girls that you play rugby with and have done over the years?
I mean, it's a difficult one. There's been so many. I think winning the first when it was the Terrells Premier 15s, winning the first one of those, I think that was quite memorable because that was the first time they'd actually kind of made a big deal about it. So that was good. But also like just the way it's all progressed. So, you know, we used to train at Bramley Road and basically in a park. And if there had been bad weather and the pitches were muddy, we weren't allowed on the pitches, and we had to train in between the pitches so that the men could have the pitches, and we were out on the backfield, and, you know, all of these things that now we've got, you know, we would have two coaches and a physio who's there maybe once a week. Whereas now we've got however many coaches, we've got two S&Cs, we've got so many physios, we've got the facility, we've got the gym, we're training in the same place as the men at OAs and then playing at Stone X. So like just seeing how far it's actually come, you know, we used to have to pay subs to play, buy our kit, whereas now we don't have any of that. So, and we actually get paid to play. So I think seeing all that progress is really, 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 you know, a big deal and something that I would treasure. And also, yeah, like the friends. So, you know, I've got some of my best friends are players that I've played with previously. Who've retired earlier. And, you know, the girls that I play with now, there'll be still loads of those girls who I'm still friends with. So just, yeah, all the years and making friends through playing rugby, really.
I mean, the interesting one is I know that when I gave up playing, albeit at a far lower level than where you're at, Kat, but it was always one of those things that the worst thing to be is to be the person at the end of the bar with a pint saying, well, it was so much better in my day, or we did it this way, or we did it that way. Are you one of those people, or are you going to remain around the club? Are you going to be on tap for young kids coming through, you know, as a mentor or somebody who can offer up their experiences to help the next generation of Kat Evanses come through?
I don't really know, to be honest. I do a little bit of coaching. I've got a couple of boys that I coach, and another girl that I coach. And actually, she was there yesterday. She comes to a lot of the games, and she's like really driven, wants to play for Saracens and wants to play for England. So I kind of do a little bit of one-to-one coaching. But yeah, not sure. People keep saying that to me. Oh, are you going to go into coaching? And I'm a bit like, probably not. I don't know. So, but yeah, I mean, if people approach me, I think I have time for them if they want to sort of push themselves or want some coaching sessions or want to develop this or that or need advice or whatever, then yeah, I would be around for that.
So I suppose that's the next question, is that you know at the end of this season, the boots get hung up. You presumably, you know, you have an affinity and a love for the club, so I'm sure you're not going to be a stranger down there. But, you know, a young player comes up to you and says, Kat, what's the best bit of advice you can give? And I suppose the question is, what was the best bit of advice you got when you were that youngster?
Oh, gosh. I mean, best bit of advice is just don't give up, I think. Keep working on your skills, keep working. Don't take anything for sort of granted, because there will always be someone who comes and works harder than you. Some players naturally are talented, but if you have another player who works and works and works, they can be equally as good. So I just think, you know, like, it's not easy and you do have to work for it. So that means spending extra hours in the gym. Like, you're not just going through the motions and actually trying to push yourself to get stronger and fitter and faster. And the same on the rugby pitch, like making sure that your tackle technique is good, your passing, you know, and you know the game. Something actually I didn't do when I was younger, but I've seen the benefits of other players who did, is watch a lot of rugby. So like just watching it and learning and seeing what other players do and stuff like that. And I think that's really, really vital for anyone who wants to go on to sort of play high level rugby.
Really well. Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Joe, have you got anything you'd like to ask Kat at this moment in time?
So what's next then? I know you probably haven't got a complete plan, but what's next for Kat Evans post rugby? You're into your sports rehab and all that kind of stuff, I know.
Post rugby, obviously I've got my my career, my jobs. But actually, myself and Fleeto are probably going to maybe look at doing a bit of CrossFit together. And I want to go into doing some triathlons as well. So I won't be stopping all physical activity or all competitive sports. I'll just be going into some different ones.
Well, I would
whilst we're talking about it then, because obviously you weren't the only person that announced their retirement this weekend. Give us a word on Fleeto then, from your point of view, having played with her.
Oh, she's a great girl. She's one of those, like I said, worked hard. You know, she will always put in the extras. She's always working hard, whether it's in the gym or doing extra stuff just to better herself. I think she's a phenomenal player, and actually I don't quite think she's sort of got the recognition she needed, not from her retirement, but I mean over the last few years, she's sort of fallen out of that England team a little bit. And you know, I think she's a great player, and I don't think she deserves to have fallen out of that. I think maybe sometimes coaches don't like the way people play, or maybe they want someone a little bit bigger, but she, you know, she's a machine. She is so fit. She's so fast. She will work as hard as you want. And if you tell her what you want, she'll do it. And I think they are qualities that every team needs. So, yeah, I mean, I understand her decision, and I think she's sort of gone, yeah, it's time now. But yeah, it was really, really great. It's actually a really great person to retire with at the same time. But she was great. Great player to have played alongside.
Well, indeed. And I mean, it's with the men, you know, Jackson Ray making his last appearance on the weekend. Fantastic for him getting a standing ovation as he was subbed off for the yellow card at Twickenham. I mean, that's three huge, not only, I think, just on the field, playing field, but talismanic people, if you don't mind me saying that about you. You know, you are a symbol of the club. You're part of the furniture almost. You've been there for that period of time. Fleeto as well, Jacko as well. I mean, we're going to miss you. I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, we've seen today, you know, Colin Garrett and Barbara Buxton being named as Women's Supporters of the Year, and congratulations to them for that. You know, the supporters will really miss seeing people like you and Fleeto on the pitch on every weekend. It will be a big part of their life taken away almost.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll be around. So I'm sure we'll, you know, people won't, we're not going to disappear and nobody ever hear from us again. So I'm sure we'll be around still.
Well, absolutely. Well, from me and Joe and all of us on the Fezcast, I'll say thank you for joining us, Kat. Congratulations on a fantastic career, and all the best for the future, whatever retirement may bring you. And I highly recommend running. It's great fun. I never thought I'd say that 10 years ago. So, I mean, that's something. So if you fancy running a marathon with me or anything, you're more than welcome to do that. I mean, we'll be at the back. Or I will anyway. But yeah, no, Kat, thank you ever so much for joining us. And as I say, anytime you want to come on the Fezcast in the future, you're more than welcome to come on as a supporter as opposed to a player in the future. It's fantastic as well. So, but thank you ever so much for your time. And as I say, all the best and good luck. And before we sign off, just time to say, Joe, that we'll be back next week, won't we? We've got more women's games to review. Obviously, the end of season game next. So next Wednesday, we'll be back with that. And also our Players of the Year polls. And Matt's cock up over the golden moment as well, the champagne moment. Imagine having that and then seeing Fio Dad put a 50-22 in after you put the vote out there. Never mind. Anyway, so that's all next week. So thank you, everybody, for listening into the Fezcast. And we'll speak to you again next week.
This is the Fezcast.